Hello, and welcome to Media Ministry at Holden Village. Today's date is July 19th, 2004. Today's session number is BRD 2004-06. Today's speaker is Dave Brower-Reeke. The lesson for today is God's Church, My Vocation, Discernment, Support, Blessing. Mother, May I? Who is raising our children? Let's listen in.
If you wish, burn it, let it burn here. Just so you all know, this has been recorded for posterity, so be careful what you say. My name is Dave Brower-Reeke, and this class is called God's Church, My Vocation, subtitled Discernment, Support, and Blessing. Actually, this was started last week, and it's continuing through this week, a series of standalone classes. You can come and go as you wish. But my goal has been to invite us all into some thought about how our churches and our larger communities, how our churches and larger communities take part in our trying to discern vocation, we'll define that in a moment, how we are support each other in our various vocations or callings, and what the church's unique role is, vocationally speaking, in blessing or doing religious things relative to our vocations. Last week, we talked about the Lutheran roots of the notion of vocation. For those of you who aren't Lutheran, that's okay. We can still talk about this together. But for Martin Luther and the Protestant Reformation, one of the major things that Luther was about was the notion of personal vocation. As you probably know, how many of you just got in today, yesterday, the day before? Just so good, yeah. There's a theme for the summer here at Holden Village, Summon Out What I Shall Be. The theme comes from a prayer from the Iona community, which is a Christian community, originally 1930s out of Scotland. The prayer goes, take, O take me as I am, summon out what I shall be, set your seal upon my heart, and live in me. A prayer to God to live through us. I'm choosing to talk about vocation, which is right up against that notion. Vocation, I define vocation as one's calling, station, as in responsibility, one's calling, station, or major life pursuit through which God seeks to grace, create, and sustain the world. All right? And the emphasis on vocation is what God's doing, not on what you do. You know, so I've got three kids, two of them, or one's in college, one's about ready to go to college. We're having a lot of vocational discussion, as in what shall I do when I grow up, sort of talk. That's sort of summoning out. However, Luther, when he talked about vocation, came out of a much less mobile world with much less opportunity, right? So right now, if you're flipping hamburgers at McDonald's, you can say, well, I can do this for the summer, but I hope to do so-and-so. You know? In Luther's day, if you were flipping hamburgers at McDonald's, you were lucky that you were able to work and have a job, and if you were really lucky, you would continue to flip hamburgers for the rest of your life, okay? You know what I'm saying? There wasn't the mobility. So Luther's emphasis on vocation was not what can you do, but what's God doing where you are now? So how does God work through the hamburger flipper at McDonald's? Well, you got to think about that one, but feeding the world, making sure that you don't eat raw hamburger and get sick, right? Being of a positive influence and spirit to the importance of this work for your co-workers. There are things that God does through that sort of job, sort of vocation. And Luther's Reformation thing, of course, was a tremendous upset over the fact that vocation had been reserved for religious people. So you were called from the ordinariness of life, flipping hamburgers, maybe into religious vocation, like being a priest and a nun, then you were something. Luther says, oh my heavens, where do you think God does God's work in the world? God does it through teachers, fathers, aunts, custodians, and that's, you know, so vocations are important. So are you with me? Okay, so that's what we did. We talked about that last week. We talked about our variety of vocations. We talked about how our congregations could devise programs to support us in our vocations. And we also looked at rituals of blessing for vocation. If you go to Lutheran Church, your pastor has somewhere on their shelf this little miniature green hymnal called the Occasional Services Book. The Occasional Services Book has services in it that we only use
occasionally,
very good. One of those services is affirmation of vocation of the Christian in the world. Affirmation of vocation of the Christian in the world. And we talked last week about how we could share our joys and our work and our stresses, and if we wanted to use this service and worship on Sundays where somebody comes forward and says, my vocation is as an EMT, and I dedicate this work to God and pray with you that God works through me as an EMT, that sort of thing. We also talked about pastoral vocations and the service of blessing, which we call ordination. So that's what we're doing. This week, we shift to family vocations. All right? So the general categories usually are work and family. Those are all vocations, all places to which we are called in Christ to live. But you don't have to be Christian to do them, right? Do you have to be Christian to be an EMT? But if you are a Christian and an EMT, you are called to that vocation. Okay? A couple of you here are looking at becoming attorneys. Do you have to be Christian to be an attorney? Some might ask, can you be Christian and be an attorney? The answer is yes, you can. You know, be called to certain vocations. Same thing with you know, being a mother or a father. Okay? Does the Christian mother or father love their children any more than the Muslim mother or father? You know, is the job any different? No. Our vocations, for the most part, are calls out of our humanity. You know, things that God calls us to because we're human, to serve humans in the world. If we do those things as Christians, well and good. We can talk about how that may be different or what we bring to it. But our vocations are basically human vocations. Okay. If you want to read some about that, there's this wonderful book in the bookstore called Listen, God is Calling. It's part of the Augsburg Fortress Lutheran Voices series. It's a great small book about the roots of the notion of vocation in Lutheran theology. Good read. They've got, I think, four or five left up there if you want to buy one left from last week, but we won't talk about it. Also in the bookstore up here at Holden, which we'll be referring to later in the week, is this book called Life Passages. Those of you in the ELCA may know that we're looking at worship and music issues under the umbrella called Renewing Worship. So we're looking under not only the hymns we sing, but the rites we use in the church, such as marriage. Later this week, we'll look at marriage rites, and I'll be referring to this book as well. All right, you ready to go? Yeah. We're going to talk about the vocation of family today. Could I impinge on one of you young ladies to sit in that chair and push buttons for me? Laura, this is difficult. You need to push the space bar when I say next slide.
Okay. And I'll try to move that.
And in the far right-hand corner of the keyboard, there's a page up button, and that's if we make a mistake and have to go backwards. Okay. Today is Stir the Pot Day. You may push the first button, space bar. Thank you. Today is Stir the Pot Day. So what we're going to do today is look at a case study, the essence of family, and just put your right to work, move into this case study, talk about it together, and then tomorrow we'll be a little more deliberate about focusing on this. All right? Fair enough? Prepare to be stirred. Laura? It's the Lofton family. Lofton family currently, this is an extended family picnic from 2001 picture. Steve Lofton's in the yellow, and he's of concern. There's some kids there. Looks a lot like a lot of families here at Holden. And we're going to talk about their family to help us focus on the issues. Okay, next slide. These are the kids who I'm really concerned about in this discussion. This picture is from 1993. Frank. Frank's the little boy in the far right of the picture, okay? Frank was born in January of 1988. His mother was a patient on the AIDS ward of a Miami hospital. As she slipped closer to death, she had AIDS, she was dying, she was going to die, she begged the nurses who were looking after her son Frank if one of them would take him as their own child. She didn't want to die and leave him the father, who knows. Frank was HIV positive. Now, in Miami, if your child's HIV positive, you're considered unadoptable. The state doesn't even try, you know. And so they either keep you in the hospital or put you in something or put you out in foster care. So Frank was HIV positive. Steve Lofton, the man in the yellow shirt before, said yes, that he would take this child. He was one of the pediatric nurses on the ward. And the state of Florida placed Frank with Steve as a foster child in August 1988. You with me? Okay. Tracy, little girl second from the left, holding the little boy in her lap. Just weeks after Frank came home, Now that's the word Steve uses for these children coming home. Just weeks after Frank came home, the state of Florida asked Steve if he would take another child, Tracy. Tracy came home the day of her first birthday, September 30th, 1988. Tracy was also HIV positive and was born with drugs in her system, so she was drug addicted as well as HIV positive. Very hard to place these kids. Asked Steve if he would take a second child. Tracy and Frank are very close in age, and they bonded almost immediately, and obviously Steve said yes. Okay, next picture. Ginger. Ginger's the little girl in the middle of the striped shirt. 1989, several months later, Ginger was added to the mix. Ginger was born severely drug addicted, with HIV, and was an extremely sick child. Somewhere between Tracy and Ginger, Steve quit his job and did full-time foster care, because these kids need some care. All right, next picture. And the last little boy on the far left, his name is Bert. Bert was next to join the family. He was born in May of 1991, so it's about a year and a half later. Came home as a 9-week-old baby in July. Like Frank, Tracy and Ginger, Bert was born HIV positive. So we've got four kids here, you with me? All of them HIV positive, two of them at least drug addicted at birth. All of them taken into Steve's care a year or younger. All right? And Bert here only 9 weeks old. All right. Is this a family? It's a rhetorical question for right now. I'll come back to it. But is this a family? Who decides what's a family? It's our topic for the week. Is this a family? Who decides? Is Steve a father? Who has stake in these children? What is God up to here? All right, next picture. Frank and Tracy had been named by their birth parents, just like you did, kids, if you've had kids. Bert and Ginger had not. Bert was known by the state of Florida, still is, as Baby John Doe. Baby John Doe is a name that is used to denote uncertain legal status, if you happen to be an attorney. All right? Next picture. Ginger was Baby Girl Doe to the state of Florida, but Ginger to the Loftons and to her little brother Bert. This is the picture from about the same time she's out for a walk. Next picture. Ginger was quite sick when she came home in 1989. She required a lot of medical attention and love. However, she did well, becoming a fun-loving, active toddler. Here we see her at age 4, riding her rocking horse. However, in 1995, 2 years after the pictures you saw before, Baby Girl Doe became ill again. She was cared for at home, and she died at the age of 6. Laura. However, our story is mostly about Bert. The other picture of Bert from 1999. This is on his 8th birthday. Pretty happy looking kid, I think. Next picture. Wayne and Ernie. In the late 1990s, the family moved to Oregon. They moved from Florida to Oregon because Steve had extended family up here. Parents wanted to be around them. The kids' new pediatrician. Anybody ever moved here with kids? No?
Say again.
Anybody ever moved with kids? What's the first thing you do in the new community?
You find a school.
You find a church, perhaps. You find doctors, dentists, all that sort of stuff. If you've got kids who are HIV positive, you do that right away. You know what you're looking for. In the late 1990s, the family moved to Oregon. The kids' new pediatrician noticed how well Frank, Tracy, and Bert were doing. He asked Steve and Roger, which I'll introduce in a moment, if they would take two brothers with AIDS whom the state of Oregon could not place. Within weeks, Wayne and Ernie, now ages 8 and 5, join the family. Next picture. Is this a family? Important to our story is the fact that Steve Lofton is gay. His partner, Roger Croteau, also works as a pediatric nurse in the Miami hospital where Frank and Tracy were born. Steve was able to quit his job and become a stay-at-home parent in part because Roger continued to work at the hospital. Fairly typical situation for people trying to raise a family. So we've got who? We got Bert, we got Wayne and Ernie, we got Frank, we have Tracy, we have Steve, and on the far right, we have Roger. Next picture. Dad and Raj are the only parents any of these children have ever known. Next picture. Trick or treat. Halloween 2000, Portland. Kids dress up as wizards for trick or treat. Next picture. Christmas shopping, 2000, Tracy, Ernie, Frank in the back row, Bert and Wayne in the front row. Those are Christmas ribbons and stuff. They look like they're doing shopping somewhere. Next picture. Here's the whole family, 2001. It's the most recent picture I have. In the back, Bert. Remember Bert. And Frank looks a lot better without his glasses, don't you think? Go up one picture. Can you go up one picture, Laura, the top right? Yeah, see, that is a picture that I just... You know when you look back at your adolescent pictures, it's a lot better. Bert and Frank, there we go. In the middle is Roger and Steve, and at the bottom we have Wayne, Tracy, and Ernie. Next picture. Is this a family? Interracial. Five foster children, two dads. Presumably loving aunts, uncles, and grandparents. Let's talk about that for a second. Is this a family?
Sure.
Yes.
Sure. You say that with some conviction.
Sure.
What makes it a family?
It's a nuclear group of people living together and sharing their lives and sharing love and meals and all the things that families traditionally do.
Listen to language very carefully. Sharing meals, sharing love, sharing space, doing things that families normally do. I've noticed chipmunks out here. Okay? It's just a family.
They're sharing a commitment to each other. I think that's important.
Okay. There's certainly a commitment here on Steve's part. We know there's a commitment on Steve's part. To whom?
To the kids.
Are they still foster children? They're not adopted?
These are all foster kids. They're all HIV positive. They are not adoptable.
Okay.
These are foster kids.
So when they're considered not adoptable, that's not because they think no one wants to adopt them. It's actually that they won't adopt. They won't allow them to be adopted.
I'll get myself in trouble here quickly. The state of Florida will not put these kids up for adoption.
Even if someone says, I want to adopt
right.
a child.
They don't. And I assume part of the reason is because of the great expense of dealing with kids who are HIV positive. You know, the state doing that. But they're just, adoption's not part of the picture.
But the state pays for foster care, and if they're adopted, then it becomes strictly the parents' financial responsibility.
That's correct.
It would cost them less to allow them to be adopted.
Perhaps.
It
would cost the state less.
It would seem so, but there's medical costs. Who's going to pay for that? You see, it's part of my question here, if this is a family or not. I mean, who's responsible for what here? Is not a family a series of mutual responsibilities? That was your saying. This is a family. There's all sorts of mutual responsibilities here.
But then there's also the idea of like a co-op of some kind, if it's a group of friends living together. Maybe it's the state of mind of the people who are in the space.
Yeah, what if you're a college student and you could get four or five other college students and rent a house and you cook meals for each other and you care for each other and are you a family?
No, I don't consider that a family because his grandson has a house up, he goes to the University of Montana and has a house up there
mm-hmm.
and rents three rooms out to three other fellows to help pay for it.
Yeah. Who decides this sort of question?
There must be a legal definition.
Okay, the law must decide something about this, right?
Yeah, state by state, probably.
Yeah? I'm sorry, back there?
I think the people involved in the relationship define that, if they're a family or not.
If the intention is there to be a family, then they're a family.
Yeah,
family. Yes, last week when we were talking about professional vocations, and I talked about affirming the vocation of the EMT worker in a church service, I tried to get myself in trouble. I asked the class this. Are you and your congregation going to affirm the vocation of anybody who steps forward in the congregation? What if, for example, they are, you fill in the blank, a quote abortion doctor, or a quote a soldier, or a Chippendale dancer, or whatever, you know? And the question was, who defines what they're okay? What we decided was, is if they go through classes and we have some discussions about this, we'll find out how they're serving God in that vocation. But I said, who defines the vocation? Who defines a vocation or not? They said, the individual does.
Yeah, but I don't have to qualify by vocation to be a Lutheran. I'm a Lutheran by grace.
So. You're a Lutheran because you were baptized in a Lutheran church with the green hymnal and a Lutheran pastor.
Actually, not.
Yeah, okay, well, then you're not a Lutheran. Okay,
I baptized a Lutheran, but not the green hymnal.
Okay, I think I baptized Christian.
Yeah.
I think there
there's many ways in which to define that. One is not only, like you said, the relationship a person has. I might consider somebody my family. They might not consider me theirs. Doesn't matter. It's how I do it. But there's also the legal issues that we've talked about. And then I know in the work that I do in child care and Head Start, you know, we have very specific parameters who we can define as the legal guardians of kids. So, you know, I think it's a rhetorical question.
Well, thank you. Would you please begin to bring to this conversation your field of expertise? I would like to hear from you. Under my field of expertise, this is a family, not a family. Yes?
Well, Luther certainly wouldn't have thought that anybody could step forward if they thought they had a vocation and be welcomed as having a vocation. I mean, prostitutes and hitmen, just to name two, may come forward and be very good at what they do, but he wouldn't have thought that was a vocation, regardless of whether they thought it was a vocation.
So
regardless of whether they could give some kind of account of how the prostitute, say, was saving the money to raise children who otherwise wouldn't have any income. I mean, you could give an account, which would sound very compelling, but you still wouldn't have gotten by Luther on at least those two vocations.
And the difference between a hitman and a soldier would be what?
I'm not, I didn't answer one about the soldier. I mean, it seems to me that the soldier...
I'm sorry.
Well,
Luther answers that. Luther says the difference between a hitman and a soldier is the soldier is authorized
correct.
By a God-ordained institutional
right.
government
right.
to do this job.
Right.
And so vocation becomes God's church, my vocation, colon, discernment, support, blessing, discernment. Vocation becomes that we don't just discern by ourselves,
right.
but the society discerns with us. Huh? Remember this, looking back to it. Laura's going to the slide. Bert. Over the years, Bert has grown to a smart, intuitive, funny kid, says Steve. He is 10 years old in this picture. He's 13 years old. He's 10 in the picture. He's 13 years old now. In 1994, 10 years ago, Bert seroreverted, and no longer tested positive for HIV. Now, those of you in the medical world can maybe help us with this. It's sort of a mysterious process, but some immune deficiency diseases seem to reverse themselves spontaneously. Nobody exactly knows why. But the point is...
Pretty much only in children, right?
Well, I don't know. I'm out of my field here. I don't know when he was tested last for HIV. He could have been non-HIV for 9 to 10 years for all I know. But nonetheless, 1994, Bert no longer tests positive for HIV. Now, being available for adoption by the state of Florida, Steve Lofton makes application to be his adoptive father. State of Florida will not consider Steve as an adoptive parent because he is gay. Florida is the only state of the 50 U.S. states that has an anti-gay adoption policy. That is, they will not let gay people adopt by definition. The state of Florida will not consider Steve as an adoptive parent because he is gay. However, Bert's caseworker, his social worker, right, lists a permanency goal, you with me? A permanency goal in his file while Steve pursues other means towards adoption, specifically challenging the anti-gay adoption law in Florida courts. You with me? Okay. June 21st, 2001, a new caseworker takes over Bert's case. This new caseworker calls Steve and tells him the state is now actively seeking another placement outside the family for Bert. Steve asks if they will postpone that action until the case is settled in court. Caseworker says no, but we will not remove him until we have a place to put him. All right? Next slide. The state says Bert will not be removed from Steve's care until someone else is found to adopt him. However, they will give no other assurances of any sort. Yellow things are for discussion. What do you think are in the Bert's best interests?
Stable place to be.
Where does Bert want to be? He's a teenager. He should have a say in that process.
Bert's 13. He's not a legal age to do it. Well, he's 10 at this point. Mm-hmm. He's not a legal age to say nothing. Although, yes, you've certainly asked him. Mm-hmm. Okay, stable home, stay with his parents, I heard. Mm-hmm. Who are his parents, incidentally? We don't know. They're gone.
I was referring to...
I know you were, thank you. Yes, you were referring to Roger and Steve. Laura.
I was just going to ask what benefits there are to children to be technically adopted, if any. Do they get special benefits that they wouldn't get in foster care?
Yes.
What does adoption do for a child? It's a huge important question.
Makes them legal parents.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. No difference between that and a biological child. All of a sudden, a child who's adopted has inheritance rights. All of a sudden, you can mark them off in your tax form as a tax write-off. I mean, there's a zillion things that happen when a child is adopted.
You can appoint who would become their guardian on your death, and as a foster parent, you cannot do that.
You can make medical decisions. I mean, foster care, you are under the auspices of the state who's in charge of a child. The fact here that the state can say you can't have her anymore should be no surprise. We never said you could have them in the first place. We just asked you to take care of them for us, and we've been paying you. Now we changed our mind. Too bad.
How does the state of Florida, and the state of Florida must let foster children move with, I mean, a lot of states won't let, a lot of people adopt children because they can move with them, whereas if they're foster children, they can't. But Florida must, because it doesn't let gay people adopt, let gay people move, because these people move to Florida, right?
Anybody here been to foster parents?
Oregon, move to Oregon.
Yeah, anybody here a foster parent? Okay. As a foster parent, were you able to adopt children if you wanted to, or just serve as a foster parent?
Well, ours was different because it was a family member from another state, but we were a foster parent to my niece from Nevada, and we went to North Dakota. And so, but we didn't have any rights. So the state of Nevada had all the decision-making power. We were just considered a placement for her.
And they were clear with you about that, right?
Right.
Could you move from state to state if you want to, as long as you let them know?
It didn't matter. They were so pleased that North Dakota would pay her food stamps and stuff. They were just glad.
See, so the answer to your question is, sure, they moved to Portland.
Uh-huh.
You know, as long as you let the person responsible, which is the state of Florida, know what's going on.
Right.
I mean, for heaven's sakes, Steve and Roger are a deal for the state of Oregon, for the state of Florida. Taking these four hard, very difficult kids that would cost them how many thousands of dollars a year to care for an institution? You know? So by all means, you'd be a foster kid. But there never has been an option to adopt because these kids are HIV positive. If they weren't HIV positive, a parent could say, this foster kid's working out well, and we see that happen a lot, I'd like to adopt. But that's never been an option here. And Steve's never been worried about losing these kids because who in the world's going to want an HIV kid?
So I think when we talk about defining family, a nice way to look at it is to say, for what purposes are we defining it, and who's defining? For example, at Holden Village, if you're a single parent, there's a limit to how much you can pay for a week. You know, if you have six kids, you won't pay past a certain amount. So they would have to define who qualifies as a single parent. Can a foster parent do that, whatnot? So then the question to me is, what does the state define as a family, and why did they decide that this was not an appropriate family?
Okay.
And what do they use to make that decision?
Okay, yeah, Anna says, we need to know who's asking the question why, about what's a family.
That's right.
Okay. Right now it's pretty clear, what do you think of Bert's best interests? I think this has narrowed the question down nicely. We're asking, because we don't know about Bert, where he should be. And you all said, for heaven's sakes, it's pretty clear to any idiot like me that Bert's best interests are with this family. That's what you said, okay? But yeah, understand where the conversations going this week. This is stir the pot day, all right? I mean, are we not church, government, culture, asking this question all over the place? Are there questions of abortion, marriage, divorce, all those questions, huh? We're asking the same question. What's a family? Who gets to decide and who's got a stake in it? Laura, let's go on. Steve's case against Florida's anti-gay adoption law lost in the last of Florida's courts in 1997, which I mean to say went through, you know, appeals, stuff like that. A county judge of Florida, refusing to rule the law unconstitutional, nonetheless said, if the state legislature chooses to allow children to languish in foster care instead of opening the doors to homosexual households, it has that authority. Where do laws come from? They come from the legislature. He said, I don't like it, but if they want to do it, they can do it. Steve, sorry, they can't adopt them. Okay, Laura, next slide. Steve appealed this case to the federal courts. This past January 29th, just 6 months ago, the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals upheld Florida's ban on gay adoption, for it remains what the only family has ever known, only until such time as the state of Florida finds a suitable adoptive family for him.
Just out of curiosity, if you do not declare your sexual orientation, is there any way for the state to find out about that?
Steve tried that. On adoption applications, it very clearly in Florida asks sexual orientation. You won't find that in any other state's application process. It doesn't matter. Most of us consider that a breach of right to privacy. Mm-hmm. If you also look at their marriage application form, you get a count on courthouse when you get married, since the 1970s Anita Bryant days, it says this application is made by husband, parenthesis, man, writing your name, wife, parenthesis, woman, writing the name. And there was a lot of anti-gay concern that came out of the Anita Bryant movement in this late 70s, and they got their act together way ahead of the rest of the states right now on that one, right? Okay. So, yeah, Steve filled out an application. He filled out an application for adoption and left that blank. They said, no. We all know who you are. I mean, Steve and Roger had won awards in Florida as outstanding foster care. There had been a huge write-up in the Miami Herald, the house that Love built, about this family. Everybody knows what's going on. So he left a blank. They said, fill in the blank and then we'll talk.
Are both of them designated as the foster parents?
No, only Steve is designated as the foster parent.
Right.
And only Steve was applying for adoption.
Right.
Now, of the remaining 49 states that do allow gay adoption, that is, a gay adult to adopt children, a little less than half of them will allow co-adoption, that is, two gay people adopting the same child. Now, if my wife and I wish to adopt, I can adopt alone, and she's out of the picture, or we can both adopt the child and become two legal parents. In half of the states that allow gay adoption, they won't allow two people to do that.
So if I was a gay man married to a lesbian woman, could we adopt?
Where?
I'm asking, I don't know.
It's a good question. Is it gender?
It depends upon the state. That's an interesting question. Even in Florida, if you were to put down a father, mother, male, female, I don't know.
Yeah.
But under the box, it asks you.
If you're gay or not.
If you're gay or not, and you'd say yes, and then you'd probably.
How about the other states when you can adopt single but not as a couple? Then could you do it?
Yeah. I think that's...
We know statistically that 10% of the population is gay.
Right.
A large percentage of which are married and living heterosexual slash whatever other lives. So
if you don't know or declare yourself as gay, and you're in a heterosexual legal marital union, you can probably adopt that way. Okay. Laura, let's go on. But I'm not an attorney, so...
Can I back up to one thing? You said that... As heterosexual married couple,
yes.
One could adopt a child.
Yes.
And I don't think they can.
Okay, I may be wrong about that.
Because legally, for example, if a married woman bears a child, regardless of who is biological father of that child, mm-hmm. her husband is the legal father of those children.
Correct.
So I don't know all 50 states, but I think that married couples must adopt together.
Okay, I will gladly take that as a correction because I certainly don't know.
Okay.
The point here being is if you are a heterosexual married couple, you cannot pull yourself out from the marriage and adopt on a unilateral basis. You have to do it as a couple.
Right.
If you're single, you can adopt as a single individual. If you're single gay, you can adopt as a single individual in everywhere but Florida. If you are in a relationship as a gay person, it gets more complicated. In half of the remaining states, they won't let you co-adopt, and some of them they will. Okay, again, is this a family? You know, just for information's sake, there's 3,400 foster kids in Florida alone waiting for adoptive families. In Florida, they can't go to gay couples. Next slide, Laura. Okay, let's get to it. Question of vocation. Is Steve Lofton a father? Why do you say yes?
Because he fathers those children. I mean, he parents them. He loves them. He takes care of them.
We've got an issue going on here between what our gut says, what the state says, what the church says, But your gut is saying, duh.
And I would think that he views it as a permanent relationship, or wants it to be a permanent relationship.
A unique thing here was that Steve never had the option to adopt these kids, so he never thought there was any chance that he'd lose these kids. You know? Although he could, although unlike you and your children, he could sign off saying, I'm not doing this anymore. That's the other side. At any time, he could say to the state, I'm not doing foster care this year. Take them back. So far, my wife said I can't do that with my kids.
And does the child have that right, too, as a foster child? Can they report to the state if they felt they were not being treated properly or if there was something amiss?
You know, you hope that they would say something. They would have to investigate that kids aren't necessarily always listened to.
Well, I've taken calls on a crisis line in Seattle with 10, 12-year-old kids and asked them to call CPS.
Children have some legal rights. I'm not an attorney. I can't tell you what they are. I would think in the case of a foster care child, if a foster child thought they were being abused or misused, they would have to go through their social worker, their caseworker, whose responsibility, authorized by the state, it's their vocation, to check into that on the child's behalf. But children usually can only function through a legitimate legal entity, like a parent or a police officer or a...
There's another course in the state of Washington. I was a CASA guardian ad litem for a year, and that's another venue for ferreting out problems for children, usually under 14.
And that's relatively new in the history of the world. The kids have any rights of any sort, right? Who had the rights?
Parents.
Or a father.
Guardians.
Yeah, the parents. So is Steve Lofton a father? Let's leave the word father for a minute. What's his vocation? His job, vocation slash job, used to be as a nurse, right? His vocation slash job now is
house husband,
foster parent. You know, it's a qualification on the word parent. I would assume he would say, well, I know he would, that he's a father. In every sense that I would say I'm a father. However, the state of Florida is saying, no, you're not a father. You're an employee of the state of Florida, and we will tell you what your job is. Thank you very much. If we want to take Bert away from you, you've known from day one that was our prerogative. So you've never been a father, you've just been playing games with yourself and imagining that. Next. Are Steve and Roger parents?
You haven't told us much about Roger yet, so if I assume he has co-roles, then yes. If he isn't, he could be that he's Steve's partner and not a parent. That it's just that that Steve is doing the parenting.
Can my wife be not a parent?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Let me ask my question again, because this is my topic of vocation. Mm-hmm. A vocation is a place of calling or responsibility. It's on the board. It's not exactly. It's a place. Is a place of your major life pursuit, a calling, or responsibility through which God is gracing, creating, sustaining the world. I would say my wife could be a bad parent, but the God has put her in the vocation of parent. And that's important to me because you and I want more control over this vocational stuff and not give God much control. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I question parenting as a vocation. Okay. Because I think about women who have struggled with infertility. And I can say that for myself, thinking that I knew I wanted to be a parent. I knew I'd be a great mom. And yet I struggled with that, and I fought with God for a long time, saying, why can't I not seeming to be blessed in the role of parenting of which I want? Mm-hmm. And so, I why is parenting necessarily a vocation? Why do some people get to be a parent and others don't get to be a parent? Some are deemed parents who give away their rights for that. And is that blessing? Is that a call? I question it, but they're still considered a parent. And I think about my daughter. She has a birth mom and she has her real mom, which is me. And so, you know, how that still seems questionable in my mind, parenting as vocation.
again, Anna's point. Who's defining, who's asking the question, why do you want to know?
Right.
Okay. The state will say if you have a child, either by natural birth, surrogate motherhood, adoption, whatever, you are a parent. And if you don't, you're not a parent. And I don't care if you think it's fair or not, that's just the reality we have to deal with for your tax forms. Right?
Right.
In terms of it being a blessing of some sort,
Calling. I mean, I see up there discernment, calling, and I think of the many women that I work with that feel they've been called to be a parent but aren't.
Well, it sounds like there's an aspect that you think maybe, if I'm wrong, tell me, that maybe you should have been called and were not, but you are, right? So maybe there are different ways in which that role can be fulfilled. You know, you can be called to a parent and not necessarily give physical birth to someone, mm-hmm. you know.
So you were called to be an adoptive mom.
Yeah.
Well, and I also am a natural mom through lots of medical issues. But so I have adopted children, I have an adoptive daughter, and I have a biological daughter. But I know many women struggle with infertility who truly believe that for some reason they've not been given the gift of being a, quote, parent.
Yeah.
And yes, I love being an auntie. But it's not the same.
I don't mean to be insensitive at all.
No, I'm not. These are my questions.
But the fact that you don't get to be doesn't mean it's not a vocation for other people who do get to be. I mean, last week we talked about call to pastoral ministry. And the discussion there was, how does somebody get to be an individual to get to be a pastor? Is that their choice? And the answer was, well, they get some choice in that, but the church, you folks, also have a huge say. And you folks are going to say to some people, you may think you're going to be a pastor, but we say no, and we're the church. You don't get to go there. And they may, for whatever reason, you stutter too much, or we don't like your live-in, or you know your morals are wrong, or whatever. Yeah, you know, or you're gay. You know, it's kind of like, and the church says, or you don't profess the right theology. There's lots of screens that a person needs to go through. The group last week said we like those screens because we, as the church, have to be part of helping discern who goes in the vocation of pastoral ministry. But the individuals who don't get to go there get real ticked.
But we can't screen who's a parent.
No, we can't. No. And I agree, we can't screen who's a parent. But the question is it a vocation? I would argue it is a vocation, although I certainly grieve with those who feel called but aren't able to be.
Or what about people who are called, like step-parents, but maybe they choose. They choose to enter into that relationship or not. You know,
Good
questions. It seems to me that that call to be a parent, I mean, to struggle with infertility might be that you are called to be a different kind of parent. I'm an adoptive mom, and I believe that was my calling. I had to come to that. But I can't imagine it any other way now.
I'm trying to maintain here a tension between our modern-day notion that I get to pick my vocation and Luther's notion that vocation's where you end up.
Well, that's her question illustrates exactly that tension.
Yes.
Because her question comes from today, where we talk all the time in terms of choice rather than what we're doing now.
Right.
And the question of what we're doing now can be fairly straightforwardly answered. You either are or aren't a parent. If you are, then that's part of your vocation.
Right.
If you're not, then it's not.
Right.
When you start to get the whole business of choice, then it seems frustrating if someone could be a very able parent, but they haven't somehow been blessed with the biological wherewithal or other kinds of, any more than, as you pointed out, students I counsel all the time who feel called to be a doctor, but they can't pass chemistry one.
Right.
And wonder, how can this be?
Right.
And so for Luther, that isn't as much of a problem, because unless that's where you're stationed,
right.
It's not a call.
Right. And I'm trying to maintain that here.
Yeah.
What I'm asking is, are Steve and Roger parents?
If, on that question, if you are a parent,
yeah.
Can you stop being a parent? Like, can you cease to be a parent if Steve and Roger broke up? Maybe let's just say Roger hadn't been in the picture when Steve had brought the kids into the family, and Roger then later came into the picture. and then was a parent to the kids and then left and was no longer in the picture anymore, would he still be a parent to them even if he no longer desired any contact with them? Or, I mean, is that something, is that a title that can come and then leave again?
Is that a real question?
Yes, it is. The answer to that in the state of Washington is you can become a non-parent by the family reconciliation laws through CPS. There's a court process whereby you can offload your child.
Yes. So if the question is asked to the state about issues about which they care, primarily financial support of and responsibility for, they will say, yes, you can stop being a parent. If you ask the birth mother of kids that some of us have adopted, if they are no longer a parent, the birth mother of my adopted child will say, I think of him every day.
Some of the saddest parents I know are women that have given the child up for adoption or chosen to adopt a child out and have never seen that child. They still see themselves as the parent of that child and they suffer.
So, your gut versus the state versus the church, versus isn't the right word. Your gut and the concerns of the state and the concerns of the church, while we're having these discussions all over the place, you know, our Roger Steve parents. Yes, and then...
Well, and the concern of the child in the community I work in, I have met many people who have given birth but don't appear to parent their children.
That's a whole other subject.
So that, you know, so when you say, are Steve and Roger parents, rather than just making the assumption that they are both involved, we haven't, just playing devil's advocate, we haven't been told anything about Roger except seeing him in some pictures. Maybe he, you know, is gone 360 days a year and just has been there for those photos.
Be very careful here, because you are starting to define parent by your sense of whether they're involved enough. If Steve were Shirley, I mean, if Roger were Rosemary, we're talking about Steve and Rosemary, and they were legally married, and I said, are they parents? You would have said yes.
No, that's what I don't want to do. I don't want to assume, because I think that, given this place and where we're talking, our assumption would be the opposite. Our assumption would be, obviously, they're parents. My answer, is this a family? Obviously, it's a family. I would have great difficulty with the state of Florida's laws and how they're handling them. But were it Steve and Rosemary, and I hadn't been told anything, because I have met many where it's somebody is absent.
Yeah.
It's like, where's dad? Where's mom?
How many people have said you got to get a license to drive a car, but anybody can be a parent? You know, that's that same
right.
thing, right?
They have given birth.
But just beware, because if you want to start sharpening your pencil on the definition of parent, you think lawyers are making lots of money now.
Every birth parent would have to be.
Yeah.
35 years ago, I had a little brother from Big Brothers, and I would go to pick the child up every Saturday and have him and mother routinely would say, you can have him, keep him, don't bring him back. Every time I got him, I'd bring him back, and she would say, well, John, why'd you bring him back? I told you, if you keep him.
Yeah.
She was no parent.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is our gut talking, right? This is our gut talking, and rightly so, or our spirits talking, and rightly so. But boy, functional-wise,
That's kind of a frightening idea, though, I guess. It's easy to look at the hard side of it, I think, but it's really dangerous to just say, you know, like, some people aren't fit parents, some people shouldn't be parents. That, who are we to say who should be parents or not? That's not anyone's decision to make.
It gets real tough. Your point back here about, you know, my wife, Gretchen, gets pregnant, gives birth to a child who is African-American. No. The state says, congratulations, Dad. I go, you've got to be kidding. They said, no, you are her legal husband. You are the father of this child. Our laws in all states still function that way. Now, you could contest them, but you're going to have a hard slug against that one. Because we assume that definition of parenthood and those functions, and the state's concern is responsibility, right?
15% of live births are not the father, but they think they are.
But we don't want to know that. Now, it's disconcerting. If both my father and I will go along with mom's assertion that he's the father of me. You know? I mean, we've decided not to contest that. But I could have milkman genes running around, floating around my blood. Nobody knows this for sure. But we just all say, you know, you got to deal with a certain amount of grace and acceptance here in the world. I'm getting off task. Let's go to the next. What's the state of Florida's responsibility towards these children, specifically Bert? If your vocation were judge, state legislator, or foster care supervisor, how would you understand your duty? Ronnie, you want
to? Well, I would say this is a crucial question, kind of going back to what Laura said about it's not our place to say who's fit. And that's scary because on one hand we want to say, no, we can't just start judging every parent, then we would have to go look at every parent and see if they're fit. But on the other hand, we have to. Because what if a complaint is made? We have to make a decision about whether or not parents are fit sometimes.
Right.
Because there are people who are terribly unfit. So we have to make a definition. Is it black and white? It obviously is not because there's no set amount of days you have to be home or whatnot. So how do we do it? And if you are a judge or something, you probably have that difficult job oftentimes. And do we have a way for them to decide, or is it just, let's look at the evidence and is this neglect? Or
is it the state's responsibility to see that kids are in fit homes?
I would say yes.
Absolutely. You've decided that's the case. As in a doctor, you've decided it's the state's responsibility to care for that, okay? So the state of Florida does have a responsibility towards these foster kids, as it would if they were biological kids, all right? What's wrong with the Loftons' home? No, they're moral reprobates. The state of Florida has said through its legislation that if you are gay, you are by definition deviant, and it's our responsibility not to put kids in your hands on a permanent basis. We may put them in your hands on a temporary basis so we can watch you.
It might turn into a permanent basis.
Well, it won't. Down in Florida, it won't.
Well, but if no one wants that kid by the time he turns 18, then Steve and Roger will have raised him for his entire life.
That's right.
Parented him for his entire life.
But the state of Florida will have had him on a short leash, and anytime they saw something, they pull him
out. But on paper, they can't.
Well, and the laws maybe have changed since the time they first were placed. In Minnesota, kids can only be in foster care for a certain period of time, and then the courts have to decide. They mentioned a permanency plan. There has to be a legal end to that foster care placement. And if you're littler, it's a shorter time, 6 months. And if you're older in foster care, you can stay in foster care longer, but there has to be a permanent plan for a child.
What happened to Bert's permanency plan?
Got a new caseworker.
They got a new caseworker and they said no permanency plan.
Well, and I think that caseworker then somehow, maybe the first one says this was a way I could work within a system that wasn't going to allow this to be an adopted family within my state law. The second one came in and said, no, this is the letter of the law, this is which I need to function, and that's why I think that piece was taken out. In North Dakota, just this last legislative session, we had two gay parents that adopted a child, and it was running just really smoothly until somebody high up in the Department of Human Services felt as though they did not feel as though religiously they could have that, they were allowing that to happen when they fully knew that it was against the law, and so caused all kinds of problems. Well, this past session, then the state didn't want to have to go on record as saying gay marriage or gay adoptions was bad or good. So what they did is created a law that said the adopting agency, religiously based organizations, can choose not to set up any adoptions based on their own religious beliefs. And in North Dakota, all adoption agencies are Christian religious based. So basically what they said now is there's no legal way for gay families to adopt unless Lutheran Social Services decides that they are not going to be biased against them. Did that make sense, what I just said?
Well, yes, it did, and I want to pick that apart for a second.
Yeah, the state basically said, we don't want to go on record as having to make a decision, so we'll support the religious biases and let that happen. And so it doesn't go on the state. It put it back down on the individual agencies.
Think about that for a minute. The state said, you know, we can't discern this as the state. This is really a moral issue, they say. It's not our responsibility. We will leave that up to the adoptive bodies, because after all, it's a religious issue or a spiritual issue. You don't like that.
But the state is the one that grants the right to be adopted.
They're shirking their duties, haven't they? Mm-hmm. All right,
all right. I'm not necessarily saying that they're shirking their duties, but ultimately, they are making that decision.
They're letting the adoption agencies be the filter.
But don't they have to license the recognized certain
ones? Oh, yeah.
They're just letting the agencies take a hit.
How do you feel about the judge who said, I think the fact that my state won't adopt to gays is phooey, but that's their job, they can do it, and I can't stop them. Did that judge act in a proper way within his vocation? Yeah,
I think so.
This guy's a Christian. He feels this is wrong, but he says they can do it. You're okay with that?
I think the upholding the law and doing justice are not always the same.
Basically,
in his vocation as a judge, this is tricky because you can come up with cases, as our earlier presentation with Nazi Germany would provide many of them, in which I'd want to answer the question, I think, differently. But in this case, it seems to me that upholding the law is his vocation.
Yes.
He can, as citizen, step out of his responsibilities when he's got those robes on and advocate changing the law through the state legislature. But it would be, it seems to me, a very dangerous principle to have judges simply rule on what their personal view of what justice was, rather than upholding the law. So there, I think he's constrained by the kind of place and station where he or she is to uphold the law.
So what are the options here? Number one, I would want to agree with that. All of us as Christians called to various vocations, most of which are based not out of the church, but out of the state, teachers, nurses, hairdressers, all that sort of stuff, right? We work under a set of criteria that we need to uphold. And Luther said, if that's your vocation, you got to do that. That's the kingdom on the left. They do not bear the sword in vain, says Paul in Romans. They've got a job to do. Mark Brocker will tell you, Bonhoeffer struggled with that tremendously before he was willing to violate the call of his vocation, you know, based on an individual sort of thing. So, yeah, if you're the state of Florida and you're a judge or a state legislature or foster care supervisor, you may need to say at this point, I'm sorry, Steve's not a parent, Roger's not a parent, Bert needs to go. And it may hurt your heart as a Christian, but because that's your vocation, you guys, none of you have that burden right now, do you? So you're all coming out of your gut, oh, this is terrible! Mark?
This is what I think would qualify as an extraordinary case. Not that there aren't other cases like this, but this really presses the envelope. In this case, I mean, I think Steve is, if you were going to declare saints, somebody that's willing to take on this many children who are HIV positive and so on, so you have to commend that, and he's doing whatever he can within the limits that are there in Florida. I do think, though, as caseworkers, I would understand a caseworker who would say, what if Steve was not gay? What if Steve was heterosexual? And Roger, who we don't know about yet, is not, let's say Roger wasn't in the picture here. And if Steve was heterosexual, I think a caseworker might look for a situation that could be even more positive than just having one heterosexual parent. And this is nothing against single parenting, but I just know that if I was left without my wife to take care of my six children, I would not do as good a job as I would if my wife was around. And just given the way we're constructed and the history we have, there would be a loss for our children if they did not have a female figure around. I'm just saying that knowing who I am, it would be a loss. Now, that does not detract at all for these kids. Steve is doing everything he can for them. And once Bert's been with Steve for a long time, you know, that gets really dicey when you start taking a child away from their parent who's been parenting for that long. So again, I think it's an extraordinary situation. But sometimes the laws that states have and the practices, when they hit, it's just glaring here where Florida has some legislative work to do here because of the limits of this is a case that just doesn't fit, and it really shows their glaring weaknesses here.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, their law for many children, they work very well. And so I think it's important to know there's kind of ordinary situations that tend to work fairly well. well, and then there's these extraordinary cases where this kind of thing happens. And fortunately, Steve's hung in there, because a lot of people just wear out and wash their hands of the matter and say, I've tried.
Okay, the hour's over, so I'm going to wrap up real quick, and then if you want to stay and talk, you can, but I need to release you for those who, and this space needs to be used for something else. Couple things real quick. Number one, I may have misspoke when I said that they asked whether you're gay on the adoption form. In Florida, you've got to be part of a married couple to adopt. No singles. You don't adopt any singles at all, because somebody gay might slip in there. So you got to be a married male-female couple to adopt in the state of Florida. So with the extraordinary circumstance, it could be that Roger could move Steve out, marry somebody on paper who's a woman, and then just say, oh, you know. But in extraordinary circumstance, and what happens to your own soul, your own sense of ethics, and what happens to your sense of the rights of gay people when you do that, you know? So that's probably not a good thing to do. At this point, they've gone to the Circuit Court of Appeals. They do not know what to do next. They can appeal it up higher in the federal courts, but it looks bad. You know, he can go to Mexico and disappear.
How old is Bert now?
Bert is now 13. So we've got a couple years to deal with this yet. I don't know that the Florida is actually going to adopt him out. I mean, he's such a political hot potato that they just need to fluster and, you know, and posture, but who knows what they'll do. Laura, would you do one more? Who is serving as God's purpose here and how? That's my question. You need to decide that. Laura, again. How and where is God at work? Well, it's pretty tough, isn't it? God is at work in legislators, I would hope, judges, I would hope. Laura, one more time. How will you decide what is the will of God for Bert? I mean, you're all going from your gut, so am I. But this is a huge social issue. It's a tough one. One more, Laura. If the Laughlins were members of your church, how would you support them? That's probably a little easier. Rah, rah, go, go, go. But nonetheless, you know. Okay, stir in the pot today. The issue this week is family vocations. Who decides how? Where is God working? How do we discern this within the church? And where I'm going by the end of the week is we're going to try to apply some of our discussion to the issue before the ELCA about blessing gay unions. But we're doing it through the lens of vocation, okay? So don't jump ahead of me, okay? Tomorrow, if you're interested in this discussion, we meet at 10:45 here, 10:45 in the morning here, if you want to continue this discussion. We'll leave the Lawsons behind tomorrow and try to talk about family from a different tact. See if we can't get somewhere there. And then later in the week, we'll look at the service of marriage as it's performed as the basis of family in the ELC right now, and alternatives to come. Thank you all very much.